Welcome to Expand Your Empire, the podcast where women stop deferring wealth and start building financial power. I'm Amanda Taylor, investor, strategist, and disruptor of outdated money rules. It's time to own your worth, grow your assets, and build a legacy that lasts. I love that. That's the best kind.
That's the best kind. All right. Welcome back to Expand Your Empire, everybody. Today, we're going to talk about something I think a lot of women experience, especially as we get a little further into life and business. You get to a point where you look around at life and you realize something about it doesn't quite fit anymore. Not because anything is wrong, not because you failed, but because you've changed. And sometimes that shows up as burnout. Sometimes it shows up as this little quiet feeling that maybe you've outgrown something, a career, expectations you've been carrying around. And if you're a high achieving woman like me, chances are your first instinct is just to push harder and just figure it out yourself. But eventually, most of us reach a point where pushing harder isn't actually the answer. So today we're talking about that moment. My guest today is Michelle Molitor. She's been working with high achieving women for more than two decades, helping them navigate those kinds of transitions. She is a transformational coach, clinical hypnotherapist, a speaker, and co-author of the book. I love this title. I Am Perfectly Flossom. There it is. I'm just really interested in digging into today what actually happens when women reach those inflection points in their lives. And it was funny. You and I met, somebody just connected us on LinkedIn. It was like, you two should know each other. And we absolutely should. So yes, welcome to indeed. The show, Michelle.
Thank you so much, Amanda. It's great to be here with you. Our previous conversations have been so delightful. So I'm excited about today's conversation.
Yeah. As soon as I met you, I was like, oh yeah, let's just book the podcast now because I want to keep talking to you and we might as well be recording.
So, exactly.
I'm excited. Well, I just want to know, because it's everywhere right now, especially in my demographic, I think, of Gen X, perimenopause, all the things, high achieving women. What are the moments when someone usually reaches out to you? Like, what's happening in their life when they say, like, something has to change?
Yes. The women that I work with, they reach out because it's like they've hit an invisible wall of, I can't keep doing what I'm doing in the way that I'm doing it, right? They're successful. They have a lot of wonderful things happening in their lives, but they've gotten into a bad habit of overworking, overgiving, people pleasing, putting themselves at the bottom of the list, right? Mm-hmm. And they wake up one day and they're like, I'm kind of exhausted. I need to do something different, but I don't know what different looks like or how to make that transition to that place of operating differently so that I feel nurtured and I still get to do the beautiful work that I'm doing in the world without sacrificing myself in the process.
Yeah. And I know it's happening to so many people because I can't get out of a conversation without some form of that coming up.
Yeah.
So what's happening? I think, what are the signs internally that we're pushing too hard? I know we see it physically, like we're tired, but that's, you know, we check that off. Like, well, I'm a woman, period. Like, yeah,
right, I'm
doing
all
the
things.
And then it's like, well, I have, you know, or low libido, like, well, then I'm just an aging woman, or we blame everything now on perimenopause or this or that. But what are some other internal signs that what we're doing, this pushing isn't working?
Yeah, well, it first shows up probably as that physical exhaustion. You're not sleeping well. You're waking up in the middle of the night. Your brain is spinning around all the to-dos, mm-hmm. right? And the chatter, you can't quiet it. It shows up as the feeling of, I feel like I'm constantly in motion and I never have time to just pause and rest. deeply rest. It might show up as what perhaps was effective as a coping mechanism, but is no longer. And that comes in many flavors. So it might be workaholism, right? As a way to push away the things we don't want to think about or feel. I'll just focus on work and everything will be okay until those emotions that you never processed will raise their little heads and go, excuse me, hello, hello. And that voice inside of you will get louder and louder until you address it. Other coping strategies that get out of control, it might be shopping, it might be food, it might be over-exercising. It can then look like other addictions, you know, pick your flavor, alcohol, drugs, et cetera, right? And all of those, the women I work with, they get to a tipping point and they're like, oh, maybe this doesn't work for me anymore. Maybe all the things that I've been experiencing over the last few years or decades have caught up to me. So I have one client I'm working with. She's been dealing with a lot of grief. She lost both of her parents, and then that created a lot of unhappiness amongst her siblings, dealing with wills and trusts and whatnot. And her coping strategy was shopping, which then became hoarding, right? And her husband was like, we got to do something about this, honey, right? And so through our work together, we've been able to get at the deeper root causes of the angst that manifested in these different ways. Grief is its own unique beast, right? And everybody processes it differently, and it never really goes away. It just gets a little quieter, right? I've had my own places of deep grief. And so for her, it's bringing her back home to herself, right? I call it returning to your inner wisdom of letting go of the limiting beliefs that life dropped into your psyche that then you believed, right? Whether it was from a parent or a sibling or a coworker or a teacher, doesn't matter. And it might have been a year ago, a day ago, decades ago. But then those beliefs, they root in your subconscious programming, and then they become the guidance system that drives your behaviors every single day, guides your choices in life. It says, this is how I stay safe. And if I venture outside of that, too far out of my comfort zone, your amygdala, that part of your brain that is in charge of your fight, flight, and freeze, will go, no, don't do that. That's not safe. And we'll give you all sorts of BS reasons as to why you shouldn't do X, Y, or Z, right? I like to call her Amy. Amy Dalla, Ms. Dalla for
Made too
short.
tall. I love that.
She's in charge of keeping you safe in the world, but sometimes her guidance is misinformed. She's running off of very old programming, like, is that a saber-toothed tiger? Am I going to get eaten? Right? No, it's just a colleague who was mean and nasty or an unruly client. And so this work is really about resetting not only the belief systems and rewiring the neural pathways in your brain, but also resetting your nervous system for greater calm so that that inner guidance, that intuition can come to life.
Absolutely. And this is a business and wealth podcast for women, right? And I talk a lot about the nervous system. I talk a lot about the inner dialogue. I talk a lot about the internal work that has to happen for some of these other things to happen. And I think it's both, right? I've done all the work. I've done all the inner child work. I've done the therapy, the breath work, the tapping, the you name it, I've done it.
All the things,
All the
yeah.
things.
We're on the same
And
All the Things channel.
all the things. And all of it important. And I personally, as a high achieving woman, I was like, I need to do more of those things, obviously, right? And I got to a point where I was overdoing that work to try to compensate for something else. It just became this vicious cycle. Do you see that happen also? Just calling
Yes.
myself out here.
Absolutely. And I've been guilty of that too. You know, I'm a learning junkie. Like, ooh, is there another way that I can peek into my own soul and psyche to better understand myself, right? It's fascinating, right? It's why I do the work that I do with other people, because people and spirit and souls are fascinating and how it drives our behaviors. And so I'm always curious, like, how is it that for most of my life, I wasn't confident, whereas my brother, who grew up in the same family, is highly confident, always has been. My sister, yes, in some places, no, in other places, right? Our lives are all very different now in beautiful ways, but it's like, what created those differences? And it's these moments in time that create those beliefs that we hold about ourselves. I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. I'm not lovable. Who am I to do this or say that or stand up and speak my voice, right?
Right. And it amazes me how much that does show up in business. I've talked about it before in how you structure your team, even. Are you purposely staying involved in everything, touching everything? Not as, you know, not that your systems aren't good enough and the business will fall apart without you because you haven't put in the right practices. Maybe because the ego piece subconsciously is like, if I'm not working, I'm not worth anything.
Yes.
Or, you know, I just recorded an episode that's not out yet about cash flow, but how much of that is from emotion and reaction and your pricing based on what you internally think is your value? I'm like, this all connects.
Absolutely.
So when you're working with women, you know, who either have really strong careers or own businesses, how do you marry the two? Like, the internal work and then the external results. I don't know how.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I was a leadership coach and a business coach for many years until about 10 years ago, I discovered a unique form of hypnotherapy that created some powerful changes for me in weeks. I was like, whoa, okay, you have my attention. So I very quickly went on to get trained and certified, and I've added several different hypnotherapy tools to my toolbox. And what I discovered in that work is that these outward reflections of who we are, the businesses that we create, the careers that we have, the choices that we make, the people that we're in relationships with, all come back to that inner dialogue that we have with ourselves, typically seeded at a very young age about who we are, what our value is, what we're worthy of receiving, and how we can or cannot show up as leaders in our own lives, right? And so as a leader, as a business owner, if there are things in out here that aren't working for you, I found the fastest way to help resolve those external things is to look internally, like, who am I being that is creating this external result? Because, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results, right? So, and the women who come to me, they're typically very high achieving. They're C-suite level executives in bigger companies. They own their own companies, and they've got levels of success. However, there's that underlying, something's not right. Something's out of alignment that they can't quite put their finger on. And they're like, please help me. I've tried all these other things and nothing has resolved this. What do I need to do? And so that's where I come in to really help them. Okay, let's first ground, come back to ourselves, and then take a deeper look at all the various factors of life. Not in a I have to relive my trauma kind of way, but in a, isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting that I went through that experience and then I started to believe XYZ? Right. So when we can start to notice the origin points, the patterns, then the internal landscape starts to shift to a more compassionate, kind, loving version of yourself that then ripples out into the external world.
That's great. We talked about in the beginning, and I think you and I in our first conversation about midlife. And maybe I'm just aware of it because I'm in it, but why do you think so many women hit that point in midlife where they that little voice comes in, like something's not right, or they stop tolerating the things they used to accept, or they notice more, excuse me, that this is not it. And it hits right at that midlife point. Why do you think that is?
There are two versions of that. There's the classic, I'm having a midlife crisis. And
Oh.
then there's the other version that I think other people go through. I went through this, called it a spiritual awakening, right? And so oftentimes our lives are scripted for us. You go to school, you go to college, you get married, you have a family, and you live happily ever after, right? It's socially programmed into everything, right? And then there are the outliers who do things differently. Now, does that mean we still don't come up against those walls? Absolutely not, right? Because we go through life doing the things that we think we're supposed to do, doing the way we think it's supposed to look based on all the feedback that we're getting from society, from our family, from culture, and that looks different all over the world. However, I believe as we get older and wiser and have more life experience under our belt, that we have that moment of awakening where we go, is this really aligned with who I am now? Is this really in alignment with my core values? And they take a step back and they really pause and go, I don't think that it is, right? My awakening happened in my early 30s because in my former career, I was a creative director and graphic designer in web development and high tech, right? We were building million-dollar websites. And I got bullied out of my position that I'd moved across the country for. And when that happened, I was really left with, well, who am I now? If I'm not this role that I worked so hard to obtain, wearing the badge of honor of, yeah, I work 80 hours a week. Look at me. I'm all that in a bag of chips, except I wasn't, and I was exhausted and I had lots of shoes as my coping strategy. Really nice shoes. Really, really nice shoes. And so I remember my very first coach asked me, well, what are your core values? I was like, well, that's a great question. Nobody's ever asked me that before. And when I stepped back, I was like, I love art. Love art. Big fan. I'm a painter. I'm a managing those teams and building million-dollar websites. I was like, it's not really slicing it for me anymore. And so it was in those early moments that I realized, oh, this is actually the work I meant to do. It was like the universe's way of shaking me by the shoulders, going, no, not that. That's not for you anymore. Take a hard left. So I did. I pivoted my career, hung out my shingle, got certified, trained, been doing it all these years ever since. So it's really about folks pausing, taking the time to pause and go, what is it that I want now, in this moment in my life?
And women have never been asked that, let alone asked themselves that. And you're right. You're just talking about my story, which I assume means every woman's story. There was a prescription. And that was what you did. I did it. I went to college. I married the guy I was dating in college. I tell people now, I'm like, your frontal lobe's not even developed. What are you doing? But life life goes. And
Right.
then, I'll call it the spiritual awakening happened, but mine didn't come until mid 40s. And, that was a huge identity shift among many other things. And you're right, it just comes at you in this way that makes you question everything. You're like, what am I doing here? It's like you wake up and you're like, how did I get here? What am I doing?
Yeah, it's like the veils are suddenly removed and you're like, "What? What just happened?" Now, the converse of that is the midlife crisis.
Yeah.
The same thing
Talk about that.
happens,
Talk about that.
right? But the result is different, right? You see this a lot in and I'll just use an example that comes to mind because this happened to a good friend of mine.
Okay.
Her husband had an affair and she's like, "Okay, we're getting a divorce." He's like, no, wait, 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 right? But his midlife crisis was, I'm not satisfied in this moment anymore with this life and this beautiful wife and these three beautiful children that I have and all the money that I've made. So let me go buy myself a fancy sports car. Let me go find myself a mistress and try that on and see if that feels better. Let me feel alive again. Right. And this happens to men and women. Right. And then they blow up their lives and they go do something else. And then they find themselves in the same place. Right. One of my favorite books is called Everywhere You Go, There You Are. Right. And it's like if you don't do the inner work of reconciling with yourself around your values and what's working and not working in your life, then you're going to keep getting the same lesson no matter who the person in front of you looks like,
Yeah.
right?
Until you get it.
Until you
Yeah.
get
No,
it.
you're right. I remember the first time somebody, a coach, sat down with me and was like, all right, name your core values. I'm like, what does that mean? And the only one I could name was, I was like, I don't know, don't be a dick. Like, that was my only core value. Like, that
I love
was
that's
the
pretty
best I could come. And
classic,
I'm keeping it. Like, I'm keeping it.
right?
I'm
Top of the
keeping
list.
it.
Don't be a dick.
Don't
Yeah.
be a dick. So there was another thing. I want to talk about your book, though, because I love the title, of course, Perfectly Flossom. Tell me about your book. What made you want to write it? Who's it written for? And, what are they going to get out of it?
Sure. So my co-author Tom Collins invited me to collaborate with him on this. He had actually started writing it years ago, based on a quote he saw by Ali Reisman, the world-class Olympic gymnast, which says, "I think imperfection is beauty." And he was curious. He's a retired lawyer. And now he and his wife help other people write their books. Their company is Master Book Builders. Big shout out. Love them dearly. And I had done some work with his wife, Yvonne, around some of her past traumas. And she said to him one day, "Tom, I think you should ask Michelle to co-write this book with you." And he's like, "Oh yeah." And so it was a beautiful invitation. And I was like, "Oh yes, please," because I'm a recovering perfectionist. Tom is a recovering perfectionist. And we wanted to dig into, well, how does that show up? Where does that show up? And how do you go from toxic perfectionism to striving for excellence,
Yeah.
right? Because there's a difference. There's adaptive perfectionism and maladaptive perfectionism, right? I had the joy last week of teaching two master classes at UC Berkeley to a group of postgraduate, postdoctoral STEM research women. So they're typically the only women in their labs. They're studying astrophysics, black holes, geothermal dynamics, chemistry things, engineering things, like things I had never
Things I
even
don't
heard
understand.
of.
Yeah.
I was like, that's okay. Like, I don't even know what those words are in that combination. It was mind blowing. But these women are so high achieving, brilliant minds, but all dealing and struggling with perfectionism and imposter syndrome because they are often the one or the two women in their research labs, right?
Yeah, it's
In a
the same
very
with me.
male-dominated, right, society.
As an investor, and I started into investing, and I'm walking in these rooms and I'm like, And I called it out though. I stood up in a room full of men and I was like, why am I the only woman in this room? I would like to call that out. I did. And they
Good
kind
for
of,
you.
yeah, they were kind of like, hey. I'm like, no, I'm serious. Like, what? And so does that mean I don't have imposter syndrome or any of those other things? No, I think we all do at some point. But that's why I do the work that I do, is so that other women can confidently step into those rooms. And, you know, nobody starts out knowing all this stuff. They didn't come out of the womb astrophysicists and black hole specialists or whatever it is that they do. But they got curious and they learned and they made that their craft. And it's the same with anything else. You know, none of us have to be that astro rocket scientist, whatever. It's just
Literally, yeah.
your thing. And whatever that is, everything is learnable. So when you think you don't know something or you're not good enough for something, A, you're probably wrong. And B, there's always, like you just said, you love learning. There's always something new to learn, and you'll never know everything. So be curious, keep going, and show up. I was
Right.
Googling stuff under the table, so I pretended I would know what they were talking about when I first started this stuff. Like, I just, you know, just do it. And not everybody can do that. I get it, but you got to start somewhere. And I love that. What you see on the outside of people is never the full story. So,
Never the full story, right?
never the story.
Just to add to what you just said, Amanda, it's important for folks to realize too, there's always new things to learn, but you can also unlearn things,
Very true.
right? You can unlearn things. You can unlearn the beliefs that were implanted in your psyche as a child by an abusive family member, an abusive teacher. Like, and abuse comes in many forms, you know, little t traumas, big t traumas, right? It could be somebody who pushed you down on the playground and you made up stuff about yourself, right? It can be that simple, but still just as impactful. And what happens in those moments is we make, it's a choice point, and we go, oh, I must not be liked because so and so did that to me, or my brother said this to me, or my sister did that to me, whatever it is. And then we go, oh, that must be who I am. My parents said it, so it must be true. And then we just adopt that belief and we never question it until one day we wake up and we go, maybe that's not true.
Yeah, it's the awareness that you were talking about earlier. It's not like we're going back and rehashing all this stuff, but becoming aware of it and how it shows up now. I do have to tell this story because I did stand-up comedy once. I just to finish this class and I got up and I did a show, but one of the bits was about my bad dating history. And it started in first grade. This boy named Wesley, I had a crush on him because he had Michael Jackson's red Thriller jacket. And so I finally worked up the nerve to tell him that I liked him at recess. And he punched me in the stomach and I rolled down the hill. So if you want to talk about setting yourself up for it's funny now.
I have a similar first grade story.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't chase boys on the playground.
Don't chase boys on the
First rule
playground.
of law, but I apparently never embodied that rule and I kept chasing boys for the longest time. Like, oh no, don't chase the boys. Don't do
Yeah, maybe
it.
not in first grade or ever. I don't know. I just thought that was funny. You said that. Maybe some. I was like, I got punched in the stomach the first time I told a boy I liked him. Maybe that set the tone for
It did. You
how
had a very somatic reaction
I
to that.
did. I
Wow.
absolutely did. That's funny. Off topic. But you're right about the unlearning, the becoming aware and breaking the pattern. I think that's it. We get in these patterns of thought and then behavior, because the thought creates the behavior. And somebody said a quote the other day, and they were paraphrasing Carl Jung, but having is evidence of wanting. And so anytime we complain about whatever, and not in all cases, I understand if you're born into a horrible situation, you didn't create that subconsciously. I'm paraphrasing here, but certain things like having is evidence of wanting. So somewhere our nervous system is creating this reality to keep us safe based on something that happened previously. So I keep telling myself that. I tell other people that. So anytime you're in this scenario that you think you always fall into and you're always the victim of, turn the knob a little bit and say, okay, wait a minute. What is this trying to teach me? What do I need to learn from this? Just to become aware of it and see where you might be able to break that pattern. I'm not a psychotherapist. I'm not a hypnotherapist. I'm not anything, but that was a good reminder for me. So I bet you could do a lot better job with that.
Well, no, I love that and appreciate that because yeah, we create our own realities, right? We're all just energy, right? Everything is just made out of energy, and thoughts are energy too. And the more we think a thought, the more true it becomes for us because the neural pathways in our brain become more and more hardwired around that belief. And that belief might be, I am enough or I'm not enough. And the more you tell yourself either or, the more it becomes your reality. And then your reticular activation system in your brain takes over and starts looking for evidence of that
Evidence.
belief. I am enough. I am enough. Oh, yes, there it is. There it is. I'm not enough. Oh, right. And it
Told you
shows
so.
up, right? So you're always at choice, even in the hardest of moments. We're always at choice to how we want to react or respond, right? Reacting is that knee-jerk reaction where we fall into those old belief patterns, or responding is where we pause and take a breath and go, is that true? Yes or no? And then if it's not true, then how do I want to choose differently that supports me and my growth and my personal development in this moment.
And that's the thing. I was like, I'm 47 years old and I'm just now figuring all this stuff out, but it's super helpful once you can get the pattern interrupt in
Right.
there.
I had an amazing teacher and colleague many years ago, Patrick Ryan, who was a realtor. And then one day he got a download that said, you're going to go trekking in Asia. So he sold all his stuff and he went trekking in Asia. He stumbled into a monastery and became a monk for 2 years. Like, what are the chances of that? And then he came back and he's a coach and he's a hypnotherapist. He does all sorts of amazing things. And one of the lessons he shared with me is in those moments that we don't know what we need. Just ask the question to yourself, to your higher self, what's needed now? What's needed now? And just listen. Allow that internal wisdom to kind of bubble up to the surface, to your higher self, to guide you, to point you, and then take one small step in that direction.
I love that. I want to shift gears for a second because when you and I first talked, we had a little conversation about money story and the generational piece of it. And I actually just had a guest on who wrote a book about money stories. And she was generally talking about her parents and how they transferred that on to her. And we acknowledge that it goes beyond that, but you and I talked about way, way back ancestral stuff. So tell me that story about your ancestral story and how that translates into your money story now.
Yeah. So another one of my teachers I worked with many years ago asked that question. What is your money story, but what is your family heritage around money? I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And I happen to have like my maternal grandparents gave me on my 16th birthday a ring with my coat of arms on it for my middle name, which is Carrie. And there was this whole documented book that my grandfather had hand typed around that was our family tree that goes back 11 generations, all the way back to a Sir John Carrie who was a knight in the 16th century. Like a complete gift, which I didn't recognize until I was probably in my 50s. I'm like, I should probably sit and read this. It's really fascinating. And so in looking at that side of the family, like that origin point that I could get to, right, was of this nobility and how that came down through the generations. Now, on my father's side of the family, he did some research many years ago and realized that my last name, Molitor or Molitor en français, goes all the way back to a general Molitor in Napoleon's army. So more nobility, if you
Nobility,
will,
yeah.
right? And all the things that he was able to create and the impacts that had and the ripple effect of that down through the generations. And so what it left me with was kind of, and I really don't want this to sound egoic or anything. It was just from the research, it landed as, oh, I've always had this sense that I was always taken care of. Like, and I would always be provided for. And in my lifetime, my parents came together, married at 20 and 21. They've been married 67 years. They've been business partners for all of that. And they worked very hard and were very successful in business. So I have always been taken care of, right? And so I'm very blessed to be able to say that and to share that. And I recognize that immensely. And I, but in I, as I was doing this research for myself, it was just kind of a, yes, I know that to be true in my bones, if that makes sense. And I recognize that other people don't have that experience. They don't have that knowing within them. And so it doesn't mean that if your family dynamics and generations look different, doesn't mean that you can't change the trajectory of your own life.
It's just interesting, the nervous system you inherited came from nobility, and therefore you have the inherent feeling of support. It's just there. I found that fascinating because everybody else I talked to is it's interesting. And then I was talking about my family as farmers as far back as I can go. They came over on the Mayflower or during the Irish potato famine on the other side, and it was like work. And farm, and now everything is work, 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 and this. And it's so interesting that everything that I've ever thought, felt, believed was that the only way to success is to work and work your way for it. And that's the same, it's this ancestral line that whether you recognize it or not, it just gets passed down.
Absolutely. And not to say that I don't have a similar story of that, because I do. I, you know, from my parents, it was you work hard to earn your way, right?
I'm not saying you were give you were still
No, I
nobility and you're
know.
given
I
everything out
just
of
wanted to clarify that because
yes.
I was like, yeah, I'm not sitting around here eating bonbons.
No, no.
I work my tuchus off, right?
Yes. Yes.
But
But
because
the
I love
underlying
it.
feeling of support is there. And
Yeah.
I know from my experience in working with hundreds of women that that is not usually the case. They do
Right.
not feel supported by money. And I say money as this imaginary construct, however you want to
It's
personify it.
an energy. It's
It is
just
an
an energy.
energy. You're absolutely
Right.
right. And they do not feel supported. So I found that fascinating when you told me that. I was like, oh, that's so interesting. Love it. I don't want to keep you much longer, but I do want to wrap it up and just for the people here, A, the link to all of your information is in the show notes, your book. I want to talk about if someone is listening and they recognize themselves in the conversation, what's one thing they could do to start making a little shift this week, besides get on your calendar and talk to you, but something that they could do to start making a shift this week.
Sure. So, will you be my volunteer and I'll
Okay.
run everybody through an example.
Let's do it. I'll be a guinea pig.
All right. So, what is one negative looping thought, Amanda, that keeps you feeling stuck?
The current one I'm working on. Okay. You know human design? All right, so my digestion thing is nervous, so I have to be doing something while I'm eating. Well, at night I overeat because I'm not doing anything. So my limiting belief is I keep telling myself I can't stop eating at night.
Okay, so I can't stop eating at night. When you think that thought, how do you feel?
Defeated.
Defeated. And when you feel defeated, what action or behavior is then created?
I go eat more.
Go eat more. And then when you go eat more, then how do
Then
you
I
feel?
feel guilty.
Oh, okay. So notice that face. I feel guilty.
Yeah.
And like you can feel your energy, right? It's kind of heavy. But don't worry, I won't leave you there in the pit.
Okay.
So if we take that initial thought, I can't stop eating at night, and we flip it to its exact positive opposite, what's that thought?
I stop eating after I'm satiated.
I can stop eating
I
at
can
night.
stop eating at night. Okay.
Right. So I can stop eating at night. I'm satiated. So when you think that thought, even if you don't believe it in this moment, if you think that thought, how might that feel?
Like you're in control. Like I'm in control.
I'm in
Putting in the third
control.
person. Yeah.
And when you feel in control, what behaviors or actions might that create?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just a whole different way of walking through life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then how will that feel? Walking through life in a whole different way.
Confident, powerful. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just one simple tool. And I have a worksheet. I can send it to you if you want, and you can add it to the show notes. People can download it. It's really
That'd
simple.
be great.
But you can walk through whatever those limiting beliefs are. They're like, oh, I can't, I'm bad, I'm wrong, I'm not enough, da-da, whatever those might be. And you take them and you walk yourself through them, like, yeah, that really feels crappy and I don't like it. And then I get stuck in the poop and it's no good for anybody, right?
Yeah.
Well, instead of staying there in your puddle of muddle, then you flip it and you tell yourself a different thought and you feel a different feeling, you have a different action or reaction. And then that generates its own feeling of, oh, look what I made, right? And it
Yeah.
shifts your energy. Just like that. And even if you don't believe the thought, you can keep telling yourself the thought because the more you think a thought, the more true it becomes for you. So, years ago, when I first discovered this form of hypnosis, I realized that I had a whole I'm not enough conversation deeply embedded. And so I would drive around the Bay Area to go work with different schools, this consulting work that I was doing. And I would sing this little silly song to myself, I am enough, I am enough, I am enough, right? While I'm driving around through the Bay Area, stuck in traffic. And to the point where I eventually absorbed it and it landed and it dropped into my long-term memory, like any song we listened to from our childhood and we know all
Oh,
the words,
yeah.
right? And then I'm like, oh. And then just one day, you just start showing up with this new presence, this new power, this new confidence, because your body has gotten it. Like, oh, I am enough. I always have been enough. Why did I ever think I wasn't?
Yeah.
So it's a powerful way to shift your thinking.
Yeah, I love that. Well, everybody's gonna take the thought, give it its opposite, and feel the feelings in the opposite. I love that. So I will get that worksheet from you. We will put it in the show notes along with all of your other information. And for anybody that has the feeling that hypnosis is some guy standing there and putting you to sleep, can you address that really quickly before I let you go?
Oh, absolutely. So there is stage hypnosis, which is more theater.
Yes.
And then there's hypnotherapy, which is what I do.
Okay.
And I work with clients over 6 to 12 months, right, to get at those deeper rooted beliefs. So basically, we're taking someone into an alpha brainwave state, that half awake, half asleep place. You know, when you first wake up from a nap, you're like, oh, so relaxing. And then your brain starts to take note of everything. So that's the place I take folks. You're super relaxed. You're always in control. You're able to answer my questions that I'm asking you, but your eyes are closed and you're just really, really relax. And in that place, we're able to access your subconscious mind, which is 95% of your brain power. And
Yeah.
everything that's ever happened to you is all neatly stored in little boxes and files in your subconscious. And the right information is able to then bubble up to give you the insights that you need to change the beliefs that are no longer serving you. So it's very relaxing. It's allows you to revisit things without re-traumatizing in any
Yeah.
way, and helps you change your mind about what that event was or who you are now and how resilient you are because you were able to survive that
Survive. Yeah.
incident in your life.
I love that. Well, thank you. I was like, I've seen stage hypnosis before. Like, I need to clarify that for my audience. I know that's not what you do, but
I have
that's
an
not
article that I'll send you that I wrote
it.
specifically about this.
That's amazing. All right. Well, I have enjoyed this very much. I love talking to you. I love having these conversations on this type of podcast because I think they're both important. The internal work that we need to do to get rid of the limiting beliefs, to open ourselves up to experiences, to truly live in alignment, and to have the actual strategies in business and in wealth and all of these things that come together, because I don't think you can have one without the other, at least not and not do it well. So I appreciate your time today. Thank you for joining me. I read the book, get the worksheet, read the articles, contact Michelle. This was such an awesome conversation. So thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you so much, Amanda. This is really a beautiful conversation. I thank you
Yes.
so much, and I appreciate you and your audience.
Awesome. This was so much fun. All right, guys, until next time, keep building.
If this lit something up, share it, review it, and get in the room. Join the Expand Your Empire community and start turning wisdom into wealth. You're not too late, and you're not doing this alone.